this was important because it hasn't been done before. So there aren't any published papers anywhere in the scientific literature that document all of the failed human, or any of the human contagion experiments for contagious illnesses like the cold or flu or measles or any of these diseases. Like, that's something that's immediately apparent when you start looking at the literature, and for good reason, because once you do that and you look at the results, you find that the overwhelming majority of experiments that were done trying to prove contagion or transmit illness from sick people to healthy people failed time and time and time again.
Daniel Reuters is a naturopath, nutritionist, and physical therapist with over 10 years of clinical experience, as well as being a lecturer at many of Australia's leading natural medicine colleges and universities. In 2020, with the onset of the COVID-19 era, Daniel started questioning much of what he thought were scientific facts and embarked on a new phase of private research. He launched the Humanly platform and has featured discussions with many of the world's foremost heterodox thinkers in health and science. After facing professional difficulties for publicly sharing his research findings, Daniel decided to forge a new path where he would not submit to scientific dogma or other people's rules. As part of this journey, he has just published an incredible new book titled Can You Catch a Cold? It is the culmination of several years of focused research and takes its place as the most comprehensive account of human contagion experiments ever seen. This one-of-a-kind book is a must-read and reveals many of the buried and inconvenient clinical experiments that go against germ theory and the mainstream claims. I had the honour of writing the foreword for Can You Catch a Cold? And we'll also be recording an audiobook version later this year.
Well, thank you so much, Dan, for agreeing to come on the podcast with me. It's so exciting to hear about your new book.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming, and I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to come and speak with you about the work that I've been doing, and forever indebted and grateful for your support and Mark's support, Sam.
It's honestly... the feeling's very mutual, because I think we've been on this almost synergistic path together, it feels like, with even our books. And so I really would like to start from the beginning with you, to go right back to where it all, your journey, I guess, to how you became a naturopath, so for people that don't know you, your background.
I guess I was pretty unwell as a child, and we went to all the different doctors and they essentially said, he's making it up, he's putting it on. And I got so sick, I couldn't play sport anymore. I loved playing soccer and I had to give that up because of how unwell I was. And then we went to a chiropractor and he did some dietary changes and some various other techniques. And I got better. And from that point on, I wanted to be a chiropractor throughout my sort of teens. But they didn't offer chiropractic in Brisbane, in the city that I live in. So I found the next best thing, which was naturopathic medicine. So I studied that and did my undergraduate degree. I think I started around 2006 or seven. And when I finished that, I went and did a postgraduate degree in human nutrition, went and started another master's degree in Chinese medicine, which I'm still yet to complete, and a whole other bunch of postgraduate qualifications and things. I was fortunate enough to get approached by a couple of colleges when I first graduated to do some tutoring, and that progressed into lecturing, and eventually I became a senior lecturer, which is a position I held for many years at colleges and universities around the country, and eventually got to the point where I realized that most of what I was teaching was nonsense and I couldn't ethically do it anymore. So I gave up my job in mid to late 2022. And yeah, the rest is history.
The wake-up point, what was it? What happened to you? Was this before 2020? Was it after? What can you talk a wee bit more about that?
I always knew that something wasn't right with medicine, I guess, and health. from an early age, my parents were always looking at medical alternatives because the medical system failed them. And I saw that it worked for my parents and then it worked for me. And I got thinking, how is it that medicine can't help people? And the people that do get helped by natural medicine, they're sort of dismissed as quacks and it's all, nonsense. So that left me asking a lot of questions, and it is one reason why I did get into the natural medicine field. But I think in 2014, I realized that something was a bit of a miss, more so than what I had already realized throughout most of my life by that point, and went down quite a rabbit hole with a lot of different things. And 2020 came around. I actually heard Dr. Andy Kaufman and Tom Cowan talking about this thing called terrain theory and that germs don't cause disease. And it immediately resonated with me. I think sometimes when you hear the truth, you know that it's the truth. There's something inside that just clicks. And when I heard them talking about this, I knew it was the truth because I'd actually been exposed to this idea in the early days of my undergraduate degree. My lecturers in immunology were talking about this concept back when you used to get taught some of the real natural medicine. It was still around back then. And at the time I thought, yeah, it's interesting, it makes sense, but I was looking at it more from like a terrain germ theory paradigm. Like there are germs, they do cause disease, and you've got to build up a strong immune system to protect yourself against these things. And I kind of dismissed the idea of terrain theory as the sole concept altogether, because I thought germ theory had been proven. And I approached it from that paradigm throughout most of my career, was this sort of dualistic theory. But when I heard Andy and Tom talking about this, I thought, no, they're right. And before I come out and speak publicly on this matter, because obviously as a lecturer, you're doing lots of different things, presenting to different people, and I was presenting for different associations and product companies and giving public talks and all kinds of things. And I thought, if I'm going to talk about this, I better make sure that it's correct. And I started looking into the history of germ theory, and I tried to find experiments had proven that germs cause disease and that diseases are contagious, and I came up with nothing. So that led me to then start talking openly and publicly on the matter. More so from a perspective of asking questions and asking for the evidence. So even to this day, I don't admit that I'm completely right. I might be wrong. There might be some information out there or some evidence out there that might disprove the terrain theory, and it might prove the germ theory conclusively. But as of this point, I haven't come across that evidence. I'm not sure if it exists because so many of us have been looking for it for so long and it's not immediately apparent. And for something as well established as germ theory, this information should be readily available and it's not. So for that reason, I'm fairly confident that I'm on the right track. But again, I can't be 100% sure. And if that day ever comes when someone goes, here, look, here is the evidence for it, then I'll reevaluate if I ever get to that point.
I really like that about you, Dan, is how you always go back to source with everything. And I think it's such and you can see we're going to talk about this obviously with your book soon, but it really resonates with me as well. And Mark, because we have that same philosophy, you must have come across a lot of difficulty though with going against the establishment essentially in your workplace.
I was actually very fortunate while I was working at the university because I didn't adhere to any of the recommendations. I basically just went about my life as if nothing was happening. I didn't check in, didn't wear a mask, I didn't get jabbed, I didn't socially distance, I didn't wash my hands, I did nothing. I just lived my life as normal, even to the point where we were doing open days. And literally everyone's walking around in a mask, and I'm the only person in a sea of hundreds of people, and they're all looking at me like I'm a leper. Definitely made me a better person. I'm a lot stronger for that. Uncomfortable at the time, but I didn't let any of that into my reality. And I managed to get through most of the pandemic without getting into much trouble. Still got wrapped over the knuckles a couple of times for a few things. But yeah, the straw that really broke the camel's back was in late 2022 when I got reprimanded for my position on the things I was doing on Humanly, actually. So the university was trying to encroach upon things I was doing outside in my own professional private life. And for me, that was enough. I didn't want to align myself with the university that didn't, or any institution actually, that didn't want to support me in a pursuit for the truth. And, God forbid that a young man who is seeking the truth and asking questions and looking at real science, should work at a university and be doing these things. I thought that was the place to do it, but it's clearly not. And it was a daunting task at the, or daunting thought at the time to leave that job because I thought I'd be a career academic. I was about to start on a PhD and looking at moving up in the corporate world, in the academic world. And yeah, lots of uncertainty and fear about leaving that job was plaguing me, and I didn't leave it for a long time. But yeah, once that happened with the Humanly stuff, I thought, no, I've got to leave. And once I did that, actually, amazing things started to happen, and a whole world of possibilities just opened up for me. And I'm so glad that I took that chance and listened to myself and listened to my heart. And life's never been better.
It's fabulous. It's amazing how when you choose the right path, how it just opens up for you. Did you, in that time when you were at the university, was there anyone like you? Was there anyone that you could talk to about with similar experiences, or were you felt quite alone?
You'd think that working in a institution that prides itself on being the leader in natural and alternative medicine in the country, that they would employers, sorry, the employees there, the other lecturers who are naturopaths, doctors, biomedical scientists, a range of different health professionals working in that faculty would share similar views, but none of them did. Some thought it was a bit odd about what was going on, but basically everyone toed the line. I was basically the black sheep. One person did reach out to me behind the scenes. I won't say anything about who they are or what they said, but that gave me a lot of hope. But still, they didn't publicly say anything. So I thought, I guess it's me. A lot of people looked up to me. I was basically like a golden boy in the profession, I guess you could say. They wanted me on all the podcasts and all the association talks, and they got me to do all the open days and yada, yada, yada. I couldn't do any wrong. And while I was toeing the line and teaching from the textbooks and spreading all the misinformation, they were happy. They loved me. Couldn't do any wrong. But as soon as I started teaching outside the curriculum or asking questions or thinking about things differently, no one wanted to know me anymore and basically had to forge my own path through all that darkness and misinformation and untruth in the natural medicine industry to find out what's really going on with health and wellness. And that was actually a really good experience for me to learn that we do have most of the answers. Natural medicine has known this for a long time. The body can heal itself. Health isn't difficult. It's actually really simple. And most of what gets taught in the natural medicine field, I won't speak for medicine, but certainly in the natural medicine field, is essentially all nonsense. And even in nutrition, it's all nonsense. Really, once you get back to basics, it's all very simple. Nature gives you everything you need. The body does the rest. You just need to know what to give it. And doctors and naturopaths knew that 100 years ago. It's just that we got disconnected from that information, and now it's time to reconnect. And I reconnected by going through all of that heartache and getting out of the system and finally looking at the real information that's out there that's not talked about in the textbooks.
It's actually really amazing to hear you say that about how much nonsense taught in natural medicine, because I have this hope that because I know the problems with allopathic medicine, that there must be something in natural medicine. But like you say, it's reassuring to know in some ways that there are people that are now trying to reconnect with what we did once know. And this leads into obviously your amazing book. How did the idea for it, how did this all come about?
I was actually writing a book at the time. This is sort of 2020, 2021, looking at getting to the crux of food and nutrition and healing with plants and food and what's really going on there. But I was also collecting a lot of papers on human experiments where they were trying to prove contagion. And actually, I amassed quite a repository of information, maybe hundreds of papers. And I just had that on the side. But I was posting on this on my Facebook page and on my Telegram channel. And people started sharing it. I was getting sometimes hundreds of shares. I think I got fact-checked a couple of times on the things I was posting. I think maybe once I emailed you guys about something I got fact-checked on. So I got initiated into the club, I guess, of misinformation spreaders. And Roman Bistrianic actually contacted me and said, "Hey, I know you've got all these papers about failed human contagion experiments. You should write a book and you should call it You Can't Catch a Cold. And here's a book cover." Like, he actually gave me a book cover idea. So he was the inspiration for that. And I've got a lot of respect for Roman. I've known him for a couple of years and followed his work and read his book, Dissolving Illusions, which I recommend everyone goes out and gets. And the rest, I really just took upon myself. He gave me the idea. I started collating all of the experiments that I had found into tables. And what I noticed that in the majority of experiments, they couldn't make healthy people sick when they put them in close proximity. And yeah, maybe a handful of experiments, people did get sick. I thought, well, I can't just put them in tables and put this out as like a coffee book because people are going to look at this and go, hang on a minute, people did get sick. Germ theory is real, contagion is real. So that opened up a whole rabbit hole then that I had to go down to find out what was really going on in these experiments when people were getting sick. And then I had to explain all of that. So then I basically thought, you know what? I'm going to go right back to the start of germ theory, and I'm just going to unpack this from the outset and explain it to people step by step so they really understand what's going on, how we arrived at this idea that viruses exist and that viruses are contagious and that disease is contagious. Because when you go through the history, it's very telling that none of this was ever proven, and it wasn't actually generally accepted. It was dismissed by the medical profession. It was actually pushed on them, or forced on them, I should say, with great reluctance. They were reluctant to accept it. And it goes against the story that we are told. This great discovery was made, and it was the thing that changed medicine and it improved mortality rates and the health of the world for the better. And things have never been better since that time. But yeah, the opposite seems to be the case. So went through all of the history and then started looking into all the reasons why people were getting sick. And it turns out there's many reasons why people get colds and flus. And I think our forefathers had actually worked this out many hundreds of years ago. We've just forgotten that, and it's time that we reconnect with that information.
What I loved about, when you sent the manuscript through to read was I was just so shocked, actually. There was a lot of studies that I've never even heard of that you'd managed to uncover and get access to. How did you go about doing this? Did you have to, because I know some of these papers are really difficult to find.
A lot of work, actually. Many long hours reading papers from the early 1900s, late 1800s. And you would come across It's not as easy as jumping onto a search engine and typing in failed human contagion experiments. They're incredibly hard to find, a lot of these. Some aren't, like there's some that just come up immediately. But when you read some of these papers or the old textbooks, you'll notice that they make reference to failed contagion experiments, and they'll give you like some really dodgy or obscure reference, or they'll say the name of someone and you'll go searching for the name of the person, but later you'll find out that they misspelt it, or it was like translated name from French to English and it wasn't the right spelling. It's like very, very difficult to find these, but I tracked as many down as I could and thought that this was important because it hasn't been done before. So there aren't any published papers anywhere in the scientific literature that document all of the failed human or any of the human contagion experiments for contagious illnesses like the cold or flu or measles or any of these diseases. Like that's something that's immediately apparent when you start looking at the literature. You can't go to a modern text and find these all collated in a nice systematic review or a textbook or anything like this. And for good reason, because once you do that and you look at the results, you find that the overwhelming majority of experiments that were done trying to prove contagion or transmit illness from sick people to healthy people failed time and time and time again. And actually, one of my favorite parts of the book was included in the appendix. And it's just a couple of lines, but those couple of lines epitomize everything that was covered in that book. And that is that there is a modal contagion rate of zero. So the most frequently occurring result across all the experimental studies that I found, which is over 200, was zero, no contagion. Even the ones where people did get sick, there's other explanations for that. And another point in the appendix as well is that there is a total of zero high-quality randomized controlled placebo-controlled experiments demonstrating contagion. None. None that I could find, I should say. And look, they may exist, but again, I spent years, 4 years of my life looking at this, and that's basically what I came up with.
It's absolutely incredible, Dan. I mean, isn't it that there has been, like you say, no systematic reviews of this basic question that we should all be, I mean, taught about, know about, and you realize that this folklore of germ theory and contagion is just, it's everywhere. And this is, I think, why your book is so important and powerful, the message. Can you go through like how is the book kind of structured for the audience?
It's structured in three parts. So the first part is basically the untold history. So I remember actually at school, in primary school, being told about Pasteur and his experiments. And even though I didn't really understand what they were trying to tell me, they were planting the seed so that I believe in germ theory as an adult. So it's like, oh, I got taught this in school. It must be true. Because you only learn the truth in school, you only learn facts. So you get taught one thing about germ theory and Pasteur, but when you actually go through the history, you find many inconsistencies. So what I've done is I've told the untold history. In fact, germ theory wasn't widely accepted. Germ theory was on the out in the late 1800s, so much so that the medical profession was basically asking for it to be thrown out altogether, that they'd disproven diseases like yellow fever, for example, that they thought were contagious, malaria, and they essentially disproved that they were. And they realized that none of the diseases are contagious. And they actually asked for the medical profession to abandon this failed doctrine of contagion altogether. This is the late 1800s. And a few years later, maybe 2, 3 years later, Louis Pasteur comes out with the germ theory. And it's very convenient that that actually happened because then things started to take a change away from sanitarian medicine, which is environmental medicine, looking at the environment you live in, the food you eat, the amount of stress you're under, towards this germ paradigm that you have no control over your health and everything has to do with the germ. So I tell this story in the Untold History part. We also look at how they thought bacteria caused cold and flu, and they believed that for nearly 40 years. It was a proven fact that Pfeiffer's bacillus was the bacteria they thought caused influenza, and this other coryza one was the bacteria for colds. They believed that for 40 years, and then they noticed that they hardly ever found this bacteria in sick people. And when they gave or exposed healthy people to this bacteria, it did nothing. So they threw that idea out and they thought, well, there must be something small in the snot of people causing an illness. Must be an invisible agent, we'll call it a virus. So yeah, I detail all of that history. And then from there, we start going through the early contagion experiments around the time of we talk about the Russian influenza, because what we witnessed in 2020 with SARS-CoV-2 isn't new by any chance. What actually happened, this is all an old playbook. They've been doing this stuff from the same playbook for every pandemic, I think. They didn't actually think that there was a pandemic happening with the Russian flu or the Spanish flu. They were reporting that people weren't actually ill. And if they were ill, they had such a wide variety or range of symptoms that it couldn't possibly be the flu. They thought there were cholera outbreaks and yellow fever outbreaks and all these different outbreaks happening at the same time. Yeah, again, attributed all these diseases and illnesses and deaths to Spanish flu to manufacture a pandemic, I think. So again, I put all this information in that second chapter. And then towards the end of that second chapter, we get into the human contagion experiments for the influenza and the cold. And the third chapter is basically looking at other reasons why people get sick. So this looks at the nocebo effect, social contagion, mass psychogenic illness. We look at the role of the environment, temperature, humidity, environmental particles like ozone, for example, sulfurous acid. There's a range of different naturally occurring compounds which are linked to influenza outbreaks. We also look at the role of toxicity, the role of pH, so acid alkaline balance in the respiratory tract, which seems to have a role in whether or not people get sick. Then we conclude in the final chapter by laying out what a world would look like if we continue believing in germ theory, and what a world might look like if we move away from that theory and align ourselves with what the sanitarian doctors believed was the cause of disease way back in the 1800s, which I think is the truth. And yeah, it's a very different world that we would live in if we were able to abandon this failed doctrine, I believe.
It's an amazing book. It really is. And I just wanted to commend you. And I know I've said this before, but I think it's important is how the way that you wrote it is to not, you don't lead people into a particular direction. You just present it in this very open way and let people make up their own minds, which I think is the true gift of a really good writer of what you do. But also, I wondered, was during your research journey, I guess, over that 4 years, did you come across, was there any health person, practitioner, what have you, that you came across that you thought, oh, you'd not heard of that really had an impact on you?
There is, and his name was Sir William J. Collins, and he gave a lecture in 1902 to the Sanitary Institute in the United States, which was basically a medical association or institution that had essentially what they called sanitary doctors as members. And again, these are the doctors that believed that it was what you ate, what you thought, the environmental conditions you were exposed to that made you ill. And he gave this lecture called The Man Versus the Microbe. which I thought was a really, really cool title. In this lecture, he goes in and talks about how germ theory is essentially defunct and it's a failed theory. And he gives all the reasons why. And it's actually quite an interesting read in for a 1902 piece of work, piece of literature. But in that lecture that he gave, he actually went through and outlined or gave overviews of all the different men that he went and watched giving public lectures, who were extremely prominent doctors at the time and surgeons, who were also speaking out against the germ theory. And he gives examples of men like Sir William Savery, who was the president of the Royal College of Surgeons, Dr. Alfred Carpenter, William Howship Dickinson, goes through and talks about Dr. Stephen Mackenzie, and puts in all of these really hard-hitting quotes of things they were saying, that when you read this, you realize that at the time, the overwhelming majority of the medical profession were against the germ theory. It wasn't an accepted theory that they were just willing to implement into their practice. They're actually actively working against it to try and disprove it, to have it thrown out. And that one lecture that he gave, I think he refers to about six or seven other prominent physicians at the time. And that then allowed me to go and start looking at their work as well, and just opened up this whole new world of information for me that I otherwise didn't know about.
Oh man, that's fascinating. Yeah, and just like you say, the way everything's painted and the history now, it looks like it's always been, oh, they were confused and they didn't know what was going on, and now we have all the answers, and you realize that it's a completely different story once you read the original papers. Can I ask, what's the definition of a sanitary doctor? Do they is it essentially like a terrain? Can you explain that?
Yeah, they call them sanitarians. So essentially, these were the doctors who, we hear about miasmas a lot, bad air causing disease. And they did believe that bad air caused disease. But they were talking about it wasn't just some like mysterious bad air that came out of nowhere and made people sick, this mysterious thing. They were actually saying it's bad air from polluted swamps that has been contaminated with human waste. It's the tons and tons of food scraps and dead animals and other waste that is produced by humans, which accumulates in towns, in the streets, in the sewers, the poor living conditions, being exposed to pollution coming out of where manufacturing plants, toxic air emanating from places where there might have been. In the book, I give an example of there was a large flood in China, and it killed millions of animals, and thousands of people were swept up in the flood water, and it washed away lots of farmland that contained vegetables and crops and things, and it got washed away, and then it started to dry in the mud. And as it decayed, the winds then took this decaying matter and spread it across some of Europe and made people sick. So this is what the sanitarians were referring to as miasmas. It wasn't this sort of mythical thing. They were saying, no, there are definitely toxic things in the atmosphere that can be man-made, and also from natural disasters, which can make people sick. They also said that poor working conditions, so like children working as like child labor in mines and manufacturing facilities, people living in squalor, people having access to poor nutrition, polluted water, lack of hygiene, things that make complete sense when you hear them, and they're generally well accepted today as causes of disease, but we think little of them, because we think that it's the germ that causes the problem. And these are just things that are here nor there. If you do them, good, you'll boost your immunity. If you don't, your immunity mightn't as be as strong, and then you're more susceptible to the germ. But essentially, the sanitarians were saying, no, this is everything. This is, we're talking about the, so they talk about the soil. And the soil or the terrain is not just in the body, so the state of the health of our own tissue and our blood and our bodily fluids, but also the environment that we live in. And this is the essential premise of the sanitarians. When you read what they say, it makes complete sense. And all of these public environmental public health measures that we know of now, like washing your hands, eating good food, living in a clean area, having access to sanitation and clean water, and having purified air to breathe, this all came from the sanitarians. Their work was overshadowed, though, by the germ theorists. And it sort of has always taken a back seat to the germ theory. So, yeah, this is essentially what the sanitarians put forward. And there was also a theory. So, they had this miasmatic disease theory, but they also thought that specific toxins and poisons caused specific symptoms, specific diseases. And this was known as the zymatic theory or zymotic theory. So zymas, they were basically saying, are poisons that people get exposed to, which cause a specific illness. And they actually listed out the specific poisons that people would get exposed to that cause things like measles or chickenpox or yellow fever, which is very, very telling. And actually, what happened was germ theory adopted that model, essentially. They took the zymatic theory of disease, changed out the word poison for germ, and then gave or attributed one specific germ to the specific disease. Whereas the sanitarian said, no, it's this specific poison that causes it. And then, yeah, I thought that was really, really interesting. So yeah, that's the sanitarians in a nutshell.
This journey of writing this book, did it feel like it made more of the dots connect for you? Like, did you have burning questions that you sort of wanted to answer with in your time researching it?
It basically made me realize, Sam, that we have all the answers. All the answers to the questions that we're searching for are already there. They knew this back in the 1800s. We look at these guys as if they were stupid. They were in the dark ages. They had no understanding about anything. But when you read what they were talking about, they had already worked it out. This is information that was basically, it started getting built upon by the eclectics, the eclectic doctors, thousands of years ago, like Hippocrates, for example. And then knowledge just accumulated over time to the point where these doctors had hundreds, thousands of years of knowledge at their disposal. And they called themselves doctors because they were essentially educators, which is what the word doctor means. You're an educator. So when you're an educator, that means that the curriculum is already there. The knowledge is already there. You're not a discoverer. You're not a scientist looking for the answers. Like, the doctors had the answers in the texts, and basically what they were doing was educating their clients on what the causes of disease were, and then all the things they needed to do to get their body back to balance. And they understood that the body could heal itself, that all you had to do was stop giving the body what it didn't need and give it what it needs and get out of the way. This is They understood all of this. Now, this is the way that natural medicine used to be, but it's not anymore because it's been corrupted. When the germ theory came out, all of that information was basically cast aside and lost because it was like, no, actually, it is the germ that causes the disease. And these things are just, they take a back seat. They're basically inconsequential. The germ is everything. The terrain is nothing, when in fact it's the other way around. So this basically confirmed my suspicions by going and doing this research. I now understand that all those answers are there. What our role is to educate people, doctor as teacher. And funnily enough, that is a principle of natural medicine, is doctor as teacher. And all we have to do is find out what things a person is doing, which is conducive to health. Say there's like a list of eight things that a person needs to do to be healthy. If they're only doing five of those things and they're still not well, well, now we have to find a way to implement those things, those other three missing things, into their diet and lifestyle. We also have to find out what they're being exposed to, poisons, toxins, whatever, and eliminate or minimize exposure to those things. And then the body will have a chance to heal. That's as complicated as it needs to get. That's it, right? There is no secret. There is no mystery. It's not a gene. It's not bad luck. It's not a germ. It's not a virus floating through the air. It's not this unknown thing. There's not thousands of different diseases. It's actually so much more simple than we currently think we understand. Those guys had it all worked out. And if we just take the time to look at what they were saying, stop thinking we know everything, give them some credit, I think we'll be in a far better place than we currently are today.
Wise wisdom, Dan. I love it. The yeah, I totally agree with you, and I think it's that is what I loved when I read your book, is that it's not, sometimes you can read books and it can just bring you down and you feel kind of hopeless with it. You sort of feel like, this is, where is this going? What can I do? Whereas this is such an empowering book that makes you realize it is simple, and you lay it out so beautifully. It's not complicated. You know, anyone can read this. It's not, but also I think you can be a doc, you can be scientifically trained, and it kind of quenches that thirst of needing a bit more science, but also it's simple enough for someone to understand that doesn't have a science background.
I think it's got nearly 1,400 references in it. And that shouldn't scare people, because I've written it in a way that I've taken incredibly complex topics and hopefully simplified them down enough where people can read it and go, oh, I get it. That's not an easy thing to do. And people might read the book and go, oh, this is really simple. Like, duh. But I wrote it that way. I intentionally wrote it that way. Because when you look at this literature, there is so much of it, and there's so many conflicting perspectives and arguments, and you have to go back to the original claim. This is how you find the truth of the matter, and this is how I have presented the information in the book. Again, I don't make claims in the book, I just present information. But the information that I presented is the stuff that seems to have evidence to back up the foundational claims. So the stuff that doesn't have the foundational evidence, I've shown why it doesn't, and I've given the references to show where they even admit they don't have it. But then I've also given the references to the papers where they do have the foundational evidence to prove these things, and I've explained why they can prove it and how they proved it. So this is how you get to the, you may not ever get to the complete truth, but this is how you get close to the truth. And once we understand that health is actually very simple, it's easy, it doesn't take much effort, really. It takes a lot of effort to get sick. It takes living in a pretty sick society that's doing all the wrong things and not looking after the environment, and actively undermining all the things that are necessary for good health, to get a society to the point where basically everyone is now sick or fat or obese or have some sort of chronic illness. You've got to do a lot of wrong things to get to that point. But again, we're here and we're pointing, even in the book, I talk about how they're pointing at obesity now as an infectious disease. It's a viral-induced illness. And they're blaming everything on a germ, everything on a gene, right? And that's why things get complicated, because you're like, oh my God, there's this thing in nature, it's out to get me. I can't do anything about it. But the fact of the matter is, there is nothing out in nature that's going to get you. Nothing. Maybe a lion, like if you're trudging through the Saharan desert or something like this in the savannas, maybe there's a lion or a tiger or, maybe a snake in the long grass. Like there are these things, obviously, but there's not microscopic organisms that are coming after you. Nature doesn't actively work against us like that. And once we understand this, then we shift our focus away from these microscopic enemies. And we then focus on the real things that cause illness. And that's what you think, what you feel, what you eat, how you move, how much sleep you're getting, how much stress you're under. All things which are negatively impacted by the toxic Western society and lifestyle that we're all accustomed to. So once you take the germ out of the equation, you start looking at these things under a magnifying glass. And the only way to overcome them is to drastically change the way we live as a society. So, yes, it's a much deeper societal problem by getting rid of the germ theory. And there's a lot of things that would need to happen for us to move in the right direction. But we have to start somewhere. And I hope that what I put in the book helps people to understand how we might go about getting to that point, because there's certainly not a lot of books out there that are doing that. I know that you guys are with The Final Pandemic and the Terrain Therapy book, but really this is a few drops of information in the ocean when you think about it. It's so funny. On Amazon, when I'm looking at the rankings, there's like my book, your book, and then every other book around it is about COVID-19 and how it's going to get you, or like how to boost your immunity naturally. And it's like there's so much stuff out there that we're up against to try and shift the perspective in a broader sense, that there's still so much work that needs to be done. And yeah, hopefully my book will help to shift perspectives, or at least get people informed. And if someone's like, oh yeah, you can catch a cold, or I caught a cold or something or other, you can go, well, actually, have you seen this book? Because it explains some of these concepts about why you don't get sick and what really causes illness. And it can be used as a reference for people, as a go-to book if they need to look at specific papers or experiments, or to explain to people, oh, well, if it's not a virus, then what? Like I've literally laid out, half a dozen things that have been shown to cause colds and flus other than a virus. So yeah, this is a multifaceted thing, a multifaceted topic, and an issue that we're up against. And hopefully the work that we're doing makes a difference. And I don't think that I'm going to change the world overnight with this book, but all it takes is for me to get John Connor to read the book, right? You get a John Connor to read the book, and the John Connor is the guy that changes the world. I don't proclaim to be that guy. I'm just putting the information out there, and I pray that the right people read it. It changes the right minds, and it moves society and humanity in the right direction.
It's an incredibly important book, Dan, and that I think it's the perfect book to have on your coffee table because it's such a great conversation starter. It's like, hey, can you catch a cold, do you reckon? And it's like, I've been reading this amazing book. And it's a great thing because it affects all of us, doesn't it? I mean, everybody has experienced a cold and thinks that we know everything, that you know all about it, but we don't. For people, because also, sorry, one thing, you cut out a lot of stuff, didn't you? Like there's another book there. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. The book was about 130, 140,000 words, because I'd done other chapters looking at other diseases. And I realized that I need to cut a lot of stuff out. So I kept it under 100,000 words. There's like 40,000 words or so there that have been removed. But I went through and documented some experiments that failed to transmit diseases like measles and chickenpox and scarlet fever. Yeah, so many analogies and other pieces of information that are relevant and important, but I think you have to keep as concise as possible. And I know 100,000 words is a big book, but it's a big topic, and I couldn't have done it with any less words. So yeah, it is a good book to have as a conversation starter, despite these other things not being in there. That may be for another book at another time. And I was even thinking of even just posting up that work on the other diseases that they failed to prove were contagious on my website as a downloadable PDF for people, because it's still good work. It just hasn't been published. So that may or may not happen. I don't know yet, but we'll see what unfolds.
I hope it turns into another book. I really enjoy your writing. So for people that want to buy Can You Catch a Cold, where should they go?
Yes, on Amazon at the moment, it will be. Yeah, so just go to amazon.com, type in Can You Catch a Cold, and it will come up. You can also go to my website, www.humanly.com, HumanLey.com. Click on the books tab, and all the information is there with links to the various different Amazon websites, Australia, United States, Britain. Hoping to get it on lulu.com. The editing software that I used, I'm having some issues getting it to integrate with the margins on Lulu. So they're sort of talking to each other, Lulu and the people that did the formatting software are talking to each other, trying to work out what's going on. Once that's sorted out, it will be uploaded to Lulu. This has been a bit of an ongoing saga. Ebook will be coming out shortly. And then possibly a audiobook in the near future.
Yeah, there's a confession to my audience. I'm recording Dan's audiobook because it's wonderful, and I haven't started yet. But I haven't started the final pandemic yet, so I'm in the trouble. I'm in the dog box, but I will get onto it.
Hey, you
So,
got to do the final pandemic first.
well, it's going to be a dual action, I think. So because I think it's only fair that I get them done both at the same time. So it's coming in about 3 months, I'd say. But yeah, that's that. Thank you. So great. Yeah, great places for people to buy it. And also, so following you in general, Dan, because for people that don't know and aren't aware of your work, you've got some amazing podcasts. I mean, I think your work is one of the best, to be honest, on like terrain and understanding your body and how to be well. Where so people can follow you at On your web is your website the best?
Yeah, humanly.com is the best place. You can follow me on Telegram as well and Instagram. I haven't been doing a lot of work on Instagram or Facebook because of the censorship that I was experiencing in 2020, 2022. And Telegram seemed to be a place where that wasn't really happening. So that's probably where my largest audience is at the moment. It's just t.me/humanly. But I do recommend people just sign up to the website and join the mailing list, because I don't trust any of these platforms. At least with my own website, we can always stay in communication if these platforms go down or my account gets mysteriously restricted one day and it's never to return. So that would be the best place. I am also on Facebook, and people can just search my name, Daniel Reuters. Haven't been doing as much posting, and the podcast has taken a bit of a break whilst writing the book. But just released another episode today, and I've got another one coming tomorrow. So things are starting to ramp up again for the podcast. Now I've actually got some time to breathe since publishing the book.
It's so much work, isn't it? And you've done amazingly, Dan. I just think it's a huge amount of work. And but I think these books, and we believe this, stand the testament of time, don't they? Because podcasts come and go, but the books are so important. I think they're one of the most important ways that people can share the information and learn for themselves and to share it with other people as well. Well, I just thank you so much for your time, Dan. It's always such a pleasure to talk to you. I feel relaxed as soon as I start talking to you. You've got such a calm voice. It's so wonderful. What do you, as a, just a wrap up, what do you, is there anything like you see coming going forward? Just a like a tip, advice for people of what they should be doing to kind of better themselves with their own health.
Yeah, the message is that health is simple. It's not necessarily easy, but it's simple. So there are just a handful of things that people need to allow their body to heal itself, and your body does have that power. You don't need to go through an arbiter of health who has a prescription pad in a white coat. They don't hold the answer to your problems. You have the power to heal yourself. You are the only one that can heal yourself. No one else can do that for you. Once you realize what those simple things are, it's just a matter of doing it, is getting out there and doing it and living it and embodying it. The body will do the rest. Nature heals everything. The body can recover when you stop poisoning it, stop mistreating it, stop treating it like a rubbish dump, and you start loving it and nurturing it and caring for it. And once people realize this, then it takes a lot of the fear and uncertainty away, not only from like pandemics, but just health in general. That, oh, I'm going to get something because my dad had it, or my grandfather had it, or, it's a genetic thing, it's a contagious thing, it's an unknown thing. It's this weird thing that no one knows why we're getting these different diseases. It's really not that complicated. It's not that scary. The answers that we seek are already there. We just need to take the time to look. And that's what I try and do on Humanly, is to put that information out for people. I've got like a free webinar library. People can go and join up to that. And I give away 95% of all this stuff. I just give it away. Because I believe that this is knowledge for everybody. Everyone should have access to it. It shouldn't be a secret. It's not meant to be difficult. And our lives can actually be very enjoyable. They don't need to be a struggle. Just takes a little bit of willpower, some guts, and being inspired, motivated, and empowered. And I hope that's what I aim to achieve. And hopefully, that's the message I've got across this evening. Because I care. I care about humanity. I care about the truth. And I care that we move forward together in the right direction, rather than going down the wrong path and forever being trapped in this failing doctrine of contagion.
Amazing, Dan. Both Mark and I are very inspired by you, and we feel just blessed to know you. We would like, well, I would recommend that everyone buys a copy of Can You Catch a Cold? And don't wait, go get one, get two, share them around and help spread this message because it's so important.
Thanks so much, Sam. I really appreciate you and Mark as well. Couldn't have done any of this without you, and you're a big inspiration in my life, and I'm forever grateful.
Thank you, Dan. Well, thanks.
If you enjoyed this video, please visit support.dsam.com